put that state budget to rest, and some of these issues are tied up in the budget. Now, one thing, of course, that Leslie been holding up the budget has been the governor's push to try to weaken once again the bail reforms that were passed, I guess, initially back in 2019. Vocals in the U.S. sort of assessment of where the state is on this issue at the moment?
Well, the real problem, I guess, with bail in the state is that too many people are being put in jail on bails that they cannot afford. So, again, the real purpose of bail historically is to provide some assurance that people come back to court. But in practice, what happens is bail is being set in amounts that people cannot afford. And so people are held in jail for weeks, months, sometimes years before they're ever convicted of anything. And often are released at the end of that, pretrial experience is the only time people are in jail. And so in 2019, when we passed bail reform, ever since then, there has been, a pretty concerted effort, from the right, but from police, district attorneys around the state to try and roll back that law, to make it easier for people, for judges and prosecutors to hold people in jail before they've been convicted of any crime. And so we actually see that, I mean, it's a disaster that that happens every year in the budget. We see a push from the executive, Cuomo, and now Hochul after him, trying to roll these really protections back for people who have been accused of a crime by the state. And so once again, we're in a situation where the governor, despite now years worth of data that the initial bail reforms had no relation to any kind of increase in crime, decades worth of data that actually incarcerating people pre-trial destabilizes people, makes people more vulnerable to arrest in the future. Despite all this, we see the governor taking a kind of trying to get a political talking point that she's tough on crime or something, like it's the 1990s again. And so the impasse that we really have is that, the legislature is trying to stand by the data, stand by their constituents, trying to stand by the idea, the premise of the criminal legal system in the United States, that people are innocent until proven guilty. And the governor is trying to win a political talking point that really has no, is not supported by any data, around the state. So we're at this impasse now coming up to almost a month where they haven't been able to pass a budget to pave the roads, keep the lights on and things like that, because the governor is trying to win this talking point.
Now, one of the other things apparently has popped up in the budget has been the issue of discovery, basically requiring the prosecutors to turn over to the defense attorneys. Well, what exactly is the evidence we have? Is there any exculpatory evidence? And seeing from recent articles that they're talking about weakening that, I just read that the public defenders go, wait a moment, no one talked to us about this. We don't think it's a great idea to roll back this reform. Brooklyn, New York, have any opinion on this issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the way this is often covered in the media is like you described it, right, is this tension between prosecutors and public defenders. I would actually say that that's missing, I think, the point, right? Like when we're talking about discovery and evidence, what we're really talking about is what is the obligation of the state in terms of providing somebody, an individual and their attorney, with the evidence that the government is going to use against you in a criminal case. So it, when we were working on these reforms in 2017, 2018, 2019, right, it was surprising to many people in the public at that time. There was no obligation in New York for prosecutors to hand over the evidence against you at any time before there's a trial. In New York State, 96%, I think, in New York City, it's 99% of cases never end up in a trial. It's all either dismissed or a plea bargain. And so for the vast, vast majority of cases, they're being decided without anybody seeing any evidence at all. And what this results in is, again, people having to make decisions, often monumental, life-altering decisions about whether to take a plea, how do I get out of jail, how do I get home, how do I get back to my job, how do I keep my housing, how do I keep custody of my kids, based on a prosecutor saying, well, we have some evidence against you, but we're not going to show it to you. And you're then having to make these decisions. And so really both bail and discovery really work as a hammer for prosecutors and a tool of coercion to get people to plead guilty, right? And obviously, if people are in jail, the violence of the jail experience, your inability to communicate with your family, to maintain your job and housing, that also is a powerful coercive motivator for just ending these cases, you know, getting some kind of finality to these cases.
Well, we only have about 3 minutes left. So I want to give you an opportunity. You mentioned there were five bills that you guys are really focusing upon in your package. What are the most important ones, at least perhaps not most important, what are the ones that seem like it might be decided this year?
Yes, I think, you know, all the bills that we're working on, you know, I think have a part of our analysis when we go into the year is what can we potentially pass? So, you know, the two parole reform bills, fair and timely parole and elder parole, we're working coalition with many groups, right, led by the RAP campaign on these bills. But that's to get elderly people out of prison, right? New York has a, despite lower prison population over the last decade or so, a growing population of elderly people. You have hospices in jail. You have, you know, people living in prison with dementia, right? There's many elderly people that should not be in prison that we can start to get out now. So that's one big important piece. Ending qualified immunity. Again, we live in a society in the United States where police officers, district attorneys are not held accountable for violence against people. And so that's something that we need to address. The Challenging Wrongful Conviction Act, again, New York, one of five states in the country that does not provide people with an attorney in post-conviction cases. So when, if someone is wrongfully convicted, they have almost no way of getting back into court and having their case heard and making the case that they're innocent, right? So in New York State, it's actually actual innocence is not a valid legal justification for getting your case reheard around a wrongful conviction. Again, maybe surprising to folks. And then Daniel's Law. So we see in the news from around the country, in New York State, time and time again, police responding to somebody in a mental health crisis. Police are trained, you know, not to de-escalate things, but often the opposite. And so people are killed by the police in these situations. And so we're working on Daniel's Law, which was written after Rochester police killed Daniel Prude during a mental health crisis, to change that paradigm so that actually people who are trained in mental health, so that peers are responding to people in mental health crisis, so that we're reducing these fatalities, you know, between the police and people who really need care rather than, you know, guns, handcuffs, jail.
So we've been talking to Nick Encalada Malinowski from Vocal New York. Nick, if people want more information about these issues, Vocal New York, how best to do that?
Yeah, I think just check out our website. It's www.vocal-ny.org. And you can see all the issues, not just the issues that we're talking about now around mass incarceration and criminalization, but also our work on housing, drug policy, and HIV and AIDS. All there.
Thank you very much. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC Acra Hudson Catskill.
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight, and in the morning with your toast and mama lady. Oh, who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million.
Waif Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Waif Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books, Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, and beyond. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Georgia, and I'm from Hudson.
And I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we are here every week to talk about books.
Books we love.
Books we hate.
And bookish
things. That's what we're going to do today.
And we're often joined by our friends, Amelia, Claire, Fatia. But today, it is just the two of us.
It used to be the two of us a lot.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Then we made friends.
I mean, not that I hate being around you, but like, it's nice that there are more people on the show.
Yeah, agreed. But it's also nice every once in a while to just talk one-on-one.
Oh, totally.
So,
would you like to get started, Emily?
Sure, I can get started. I've been reading too many books at once. Do you ever have that problem, or do you read one at a time?
I used to read like four at once, but I like to do one at a time so I can keep my focus on one. But I mean, it's a good problem to have, especially when you're a librarian, because that's sort of your job.
Yeah. So currently, I am reading a number of books. So I read picture books all the time. So I'm not going to count those because those I read in one sitting. But in addition to all the picture books I read, I started listening to a book called Aniana Del Mar Jumps In by Jasmine Mendez, which I'm going to talk about today. I'm also listening to Everything Comes Next, Collected and New Poems by Naomi Shihab Nye, who is one of my favorite poets. And I believe she is the current U.S. Youth Poet Laureate. I'm pretty sure she still is. If she isn't now, she was recently. But since it's National Poetry Month, I wanted to read some poems, and I've liked other work by her, so I decided to check that out. I'm also reading with my mom and my niece, Free Water by Amina Lukman Dawson, which I'll talk about in a future week, which I'm really, really loving. It was this year's Newbery winner and also won a Coretta Scott King Award. So it got lots of shiny stickers. And so far, I think they are very well deserved. That one's hard because I read it with my mom and my niece. So we read it together when we can. And then sometimes they're allowed to read without me. So like today they read in the morning and I couldn't join them because I was at work. So I have to catch up today, but I'm limited because I try to like just keep pace with them. So I can't move forward too far. But then I'm also still finishing up School Trip by Jerry Craft, which is the third book in the New Kids series, which finds our young friends from the New Kids series going on a school trip to Paris, which I am very jealous of. I would very much like to go to Paris and explore.
Me too. What school are they in?
They're in a fancy school. Everybody, there's like, it's like, I forget if it's spring break or when it is. They're going on a school trip and all of the students are going to different places. So there's like a crew that's going to Paris, a crew that's going to Yellowstone.
And dang. I think
Maine is one, maybe Nantucket, or maybe I'm confusing those two.
I feel bad for the Nantucket kids because, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Maine, like Portland. I love Portland, but it'd probably be a bit hard for your friends to go to Paris.
I guess if you were like really into like marine biology or something and wanted to go like go whale watching and things like that, then that would be really cool. But yeah, I think of those options, I would choose Paris or Yellowstone. Yellowstone is really awesome, but I've been there more recently than Paris, so I'd rather go to Paris. But anyways, I wanted to talk about one of these books that I'm reading. It is called Aniana Del Mar Jumps In by Jasmine Mendez, and it's a novel in verse about a 12-year-old girl who's Dominican-American, and her name's Aniana Del Mar. She lives with her mother and her father, and she is a swimmer. She loves to swim. She thinks she belongs in the water, but she and her dad have to keep her swim practices a secret from her mom because her mom had experienced a loss in life due to swimming, or rather drowning, I guess, and so is terrified of experiencing a loss like that again. And so it keeps her from wanting her child to be in the water. So some of it is about that experience of having to keep the secret from a loved one, and also her experiences with swimming. And then part of this story, and I haven't finished this yet, so it's just getting into this, is that she starts experiencing swelling and stiffness of her joints that make it unbearable to really do much to get out of bed. And I guess this isn't a spoiler because it's in the book description, but she's eventually diagnosed with juvenile arthritis. And so right now at the point of the book I'm in, she's starting to see doctors and trying to figure out what's going on. So she hasn't been diagnosed yet. So I'm curious to see, like, with that diagnosis, where things go, like what she's able to do. But I thought it was a really great book, and it's a novel in verse, but I think I'm listening to it and it reads, I feel like it's interesting with novels in verse. They read just like a novel in some ways, but they often, I don't know, they're like a little, there's something a little different about the way that they read that I enjoy. But yeah, so far so good. I really like the main character. And I think the dynamic between her and her parents is really interesting. And I'm interested in the subject matter. I think it's interesting thinking about young people figuring out changes with their bodies, in this case, more unusual changes, and how to navigate that and like speak up for yourself, make sure that you get the care you need and are able to like enjoy your life and experience your life. despite challenges. But yeah.
That sounds just amazing. I have so many books that you've shared that I want to read, but I can't mentally remember them all. So look what I just started. A to-read list. So yeah. What's that book called again?
It's called Aniana Del Mar Jumps In.
Aniana, how you spell that?
A-N-I-A-N-A.
That's what I thought. Just checking. Aniana
Del Mar, D-E-L-M-A-R, Jumps In.
Thank you.
And it's interesting that that's her name, because Del Mar means like of the sea or from the sea. So it's interesting that she's probably a swimmer. I'm sure the author thought of that. But so I don't know. I'm not sure if this is a debut. It looks like she has some other books. This is the first book I've read by this author. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. Oh, no. She was a translator for a different book that I read. I was like, wait, I've read that book. Cool.
In the land. Madi knows he'll make a good president, but for her, the campaign is turning into a nightmare. From a disastrous live TV tour of their home to doctor foes that go viral, she's right in the middle of it all, and not in a good way. Worse, until now, she was unaware of her father's political positions. But as the campaign heats up, Madi finds it harder to ignore not just the news, but the growing student activism at her school, activism that seems pointedly against her father.
But now Elizabeth Acevedo is. So I just wanted to update that. And Elizabeth Acevedo has also, she's written poems. She's also written books, both in verse and you know, standard prose fiction that are highly regarded, and some of which I've read and really enjoyed. I haven't read one of her popular titles, so got to get on that. But I did think it was worth sharing a poem since we are still in National Poetry Month, and it's also April is Arab American Heritage Month. So I thought I would read a poem by Naomi Shihab Nye. And this one I found on poets.org. They have poetry for kids section, and there was an Arab American Heritage collection there. And this one is by her, and it's from her book called Transfer. And it's called The Young Poets of Winnipeg. Scurried around a classroom papered with poems, even the ceiling, pink and orange quilts of phrase, they introduced one another, perched on a tiny stage, to read their work, lest their teacher, who encouraged them to stretch, wouldn't let their parents attend the reading because parents might criticize, believed in the third and fourth eyes, the eyes in the undersides of leaves, the polar bears 1,000 miles north, and sprouts of grass under the snow. They knew their poems were glorious, that second graders could write better than third or fourth because of what happened on down the road, the measuring sticks that came out of nowhere, poking and channeling the view, the way fences broke up winter or driveways separated the smooth white sheets birds wrote on with their feet. The Young Poets of Winnipeg.
I love that. I love poetry so much. Poetry is amazing. April is one of the best months of the year, for me at least.
Mm-hmm.
At my school, in the library, during lunch and recess over the month of April, I think it was just one day, actually, never mind. But I did this. You can go to the library and you can do blackout poetry and haikus. Mm-hmm. I've never really done many haikus before, but I've gotten really, really into them lately. They're so much fun.
Do you have a favorite one?
I don't read many haikus, but I like making them myself. Mm. I make so many, I can't remember many, but I think I remember one. I think it's...
Counting on your fingers.
Sweet sugar plums, yum. Fairy tales are just a lie. Pretty princesses die.
Very cool. I also thought of another poem that I could read for National Poetry Month. And this one, actually, I recently read a picture book that was this poem as a picture book. So they use the words of the poem, and the poem's by Joy Harjo. It's called Remember. That's the name of the picture book. And it has illustrations by Michaela Goad, who is beautiful. Like, her illustrations are so beautiful. She's done a number of really gorgeous children's picture books, some that have won awards. So I highly suggest people checking out this book at some point. So it's Remember by Joy Harjo with illustrations by Michaela Goad, and I will read the poem that is featured in that picture book. Remember the sky that you were born under. Know each of the stars' stories. Remember the moon. Know who she is. Remember the sun's birth at dawn. That is the strongest point of time. Remember sundown and the giving away tonight. Remember your birth. How your mother struggled to give you form and breath. You were evidence of her life and her mother's and hers. Remember your father, he is your life also. Remember the earth whose skin you are, red earth, black earth, yellow earth, white earth, brown earth, we are earth. Remember the plants, trees, animal life who all have their tribes, their families, their histories too. Talk to them, listen to them. They are alive poems. Remember the wind, remember her voice. She knows the origin of this universe. Remember, you are all people, and all people are.